Ants Looking at Me is a novel about difference in the midst of sameness. The ant is eccentric, and the ice cream man is gay.
The B in LGBTQ signifies that bisexual people are a part of the queer community, but asking us to pick and choose parts of our identity, to constantly prove that we're queer, that we exist, can make us feel like outsiders. We're stronger together, we're stronger together.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. India's top corp fast-tracks sex law review, can bis buy a break in the queer community, and singing out to support gay Chechens. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending January 20th, 2018. The January 8th decision by India's Supreme Court to revisit its own ruling in 2013 that reinstated the anti-gay British-era statute outlawing sexual acts against the order of nature seems to be on a fast track. According to media reports this week, the review of Penal Code Section 377 is set for early March by a 5-judge panel, with a verdict expected soon thereafter. It follows an August 2017 ruling by the court that, for the first time, found a right to privacy in Article 21 of India's Constitution. That provision states that no person shall be deprived of his life or personal liberty except according to a procedure established by law. That August ruling even cited Section 377 as an example of laws subject to review based on the court's new right to privacy decision. India's National Council of Churches, which represents some 14 million congregants, published an open letter this week supporting the abolition of Section 377. Homosexuality and homoeroticism have been practiced in India from time immemorial, the letter says, noting that homosexual activity was never condemned or criminalized in ancient India. Almost 1 in 5 LGBTQ people on Earth live in India.
A 3-judge panel in Kenya is reviewing that country's criminal ban on private consensual adult gay sex. Section 165 of the Eastern African Nations Penal Code punishes men who have sex with men, what it calls gross indecency, with up to 14 years in prison. A few cases challenging the statute have been consolidated, and those seeking its abolition began their case this week. Senior counsel Paul Muite told the court that he would be calling a psychiatrist to explain the nature of sexual orientation and other experts to present reports demonstrating biological and even social conditions that influence sexual orientation. Muite argues that Section 165 violates provisions of the Constitution that guarantee the right to equality, freedom from discrimination, human dignity, and the right to privacy. The Kenya Christian Professional Forum, which is reportedly funded by anti-queer U.S. evangelical groups, is opposing decriminalization. Its lawyer, Charles Kanjama, promised to call 2 witnesses, a psychiatrist and a sociologist, to support its position. According to Kenya's Capital FM, the Attorney General, who's been named as a respondent in the case, has until the hearing resumes on February 22nd to weigh in.
The government of Indonesia, home to the world's largest Muslim population, wants Google to block about 70 queer social networking apps currently downloadable from the country's Google Play Store. They include Blued, a gay male dating and social networking app that claims 27 million users around the world. The government has no control over private mobile apps like Google Play, though it can try to block Google Play's website version. The request by the communications ministry to the giant conglomerate appears to be just another wrinkle in the government's crackdown on LGBT people that began in 2016, fueled by inflammatory and usually false and homophobic allegations by religious leaders and high-ranking public officials. While equality supporters celebrated a ruling by Indonesia's constitutional court in December that rejected an effort to outlaw all forms of sex outside of heterosexual marriage, authorities continue to use the country's strict but ambiguous pornography laws to harass and arrest sexual and gender minorities. Google has not yet responded publicly to the government request.
The people of Northern Ireland may soon be asked to vote on marriage equality. They could echo their counterparts in the Republic of Ireland, who overwhelmingly approved opening the civil institution to same-gender couples in 2015. The last major UK territory without marriage equality has virtually been without a government since a power-sharing agreement between the majority Democratic Unionist Party and the leading minority Sinn Féin Party collapsed a year ago, primarily over the issues of local language rights and marriage equality. Three senior unionist officials this week called for a referendum on the issues that are causing the stalled negotiations. They specifically listed whether or not a standalone Irish Language Act for Northern Ireland should be enacted, if civil marriage should be open to same-gender couples, and if strict laws against abortion should be relaxed. David McNairy, David Campbell, and Michael McGimpsey announced their Breaking the Deadlock proposal at a January 18th press conference. A statement emphasized that none of us have electoral ambitions and we represent no parties in making this proposal. We offer it as a possible solution in good faith and hope it is accepted as such. Speaking to the press this week, the UK government's new Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, Karen Bradley, rebuffed requests by queer campaigners to intervene. While noting her strong support for marriage equality, she insisted that the issue is a matter for the people of Northern Ireland.
In our weekly watch on the pending bill to overturn marriage equality in the British Overseas Territory of Bermuda, there are no updates. Lawmakers overturned the Caribbean nation's May Supreme Court-ordered marriage equality ruling in December and replaced it with less-than-equal civil partnerships for same-gender couples. But British Governor to Bermuda John Rankin must issue royal assent before any legislation on the island can become law, something he has yet to do as we record this newscast. Royal assent is almost always a formality, but Rankin could provoke a local crisis if he refuses to sign off on the legislation as the Queen's official representative. He's been talking with the British Foreign Office about what to do. The government has, of course, supported marriage equality for several years, so the cauldron continues to boil. Meanwhile, Bermuda-based P&O Cruise Lines has canceled romantic wedding-at-sea marriages already booked for later this year by several gay and lesbian couples because of the ongoing legal uncertainties.
The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump continues to wage war on the country's sexual and gender-variant minorities. The Department of Health and Human Services announced this week that it is creating an office to protect the religious rights of healthcare providers, including those who oppose a woman's right to choose or whose beliefs reject marriage equality or being transgendered. The new division will be part of the agency's Office for Civil Rights, which enforces federal anti-discrimination and privacy laws. The National LGBTQ Task Force joined a number of other queer rights groups to condemn the administration's bias-based initiative. "We are not fooled," a statement said. "The new office is meant to make it easier for people to discriminate, not to protect people of faith. No one should be denied care for being who they are."
The Trump Education Department's Office for Civil Rights has reportedly told each of at least three trans students that it is no longer acting on gender identity-based discrimination complaints. The Obama administration argued that federal civil rights laws that ban discrimination based on sex extend to bias based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The Trump administration said last year that such issues should be decided at the local level.
Meanwhile, transgender whistleblower Chelsea Manning has already met with some criticism for her announcement that she'll be challenging the re-election bid of Maryland's popular two-term Democratic incumbent, Senator Ben Cardin, as the more progressive choice in a June party primary. According to local reports, however, neither has filed a formal declaration of candidacy yet with the State Elections Board.
And finally, it's taken a while, but Helen Grace James received word this week that her 1955 discharge from the U.S. Air Force has finally been changed from undesirable to honorable. She was caught up in what came to be known in the mid-1950s as the Lavender Scare and agreed to the discharge following hours of interrogation about her suspected lesbianism after authorities threatened to inform her parents. Failing to get an honorable discharge meant that she didn't qualify for the GI Bill and other veterans' benefits, and that she couldn't be buried in a national cemetery or with a color guard. James officially applied to have her discharge changed to honorable with the Air Force Board for Correction of Military Records last year. The board said that her records were destroyed in a fire several decades ago, so a determination could not be reached. She then filed a federal lawsuit against the Air Force. Now 90-year-old Helen Grace James was notified via a FedEx-delivered letter this week that, without explanation, the board had decided to upgrade her discharge status to honorable. She told reporters that getting that letter was both a joy and a shock. She said that it was important to her to get the upgraded status to prove I am a good person and that I deserve to be a whole civilian in this country I love.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending January 20th, 2018. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
The U.S. government shut down to celebrate day 365 of the Trump presidency. Oh, wait, that's wrong. The government shutdown was the result of the great dealmaker being unable to forge a budget deal among warring factions of his own Republican Party, although Trump blames the Democrats. That's a different tune than the one he sang with the host of Fox and Friends as an onlooker when the government shut down in September 2013 under President Obama.
You know, 25 years and 50 years and 100 years from now, when the government is, you know, they talk about the government shutdown, they're going to be talking about the president of the United States. Who was the president at that time? Mm-hmm. They're not going to be talking who the head of the House was, the head of the Senate. They're going to be discussing one person. So I really think the pressure is on the president, personally, in terms of his own
history. Yeah.
While hundreds of thousands were preparing for the January 20th Women's March around the world to protest his policies, Trump congratulated himself on January 19th for becoming the first U.S. president to address the annual March for Life rally in Washington, D.C. to protest the 1973 Supreme Court decision establishing a woman's right to choose. However, Trump's appearance was via satellite from the White House Rose Garden and not at the event itself. He also signed a letter earlier in the week congratulating the queer political group Log Cabin Republicans on its 40th anniversary, one day after signing a presidential religious freedom proclamation that appears to support faith-based anti-LGBT bias.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
He's a showboat. He's a grandstander.
He lies. He cheats. He's a bully.
This is like Watergate, only it's worse.
He went to Jared.
Believe me, folks.
Dumbass.
American carnage. It's a little bit sad.
The wider queer community often misunderstands or dismisses bisexuality entirely, making me feel as though I have to repress part of my identity in order to be accepted by my own community.
Can out bis ever be in later in the program? But first, queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason, clearly a Yankee, goes down south for a lesson in love.
A very interesting read that I picked up recently is Aunt Sookie and Me, The Sordid Tale of a Scandalous Southern Belle by Michael Scott Garvin, 2017 Create Space. This book is a Southern coming-of-age story about a young girl on the cusp of adolescence who lives with her riotously funny aunt in Savannah, Georgia, in 1968. The main character has a secret, and because it makes the character and the plot more complex, I'll tell you what the secret is. Despite the fact that she declares that she is a girl, the narrator, Poppy, was born Samuel, and on moving to Savannah from another small southern town, decided not to tell anyone, for a time, about her carefully guarded secret. Aunt Sookie and Me is a novel about difference in the midst of sameness. The aunt is eccentric. The mother who drops in now and then has more than her share of problems, and the ice cream man is gay. On a grand level, this novel is about conformity and how this often doesn't work, especially for people who happen to be female. It also is a novel about acceptance, including perhaps starting with self-acceptance. Ultimately, this extremely well-written novel is about love. After reading it, I will never view any small southern town with the same eyes. Not only does this novel contain some important history, it proves that yes, we do exist, and because of this, we make things more interesting. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
The B may have its place in the standard acronym, but a young social critic from Outcasting thinks that living, breathing bisexuals have a hard time finding a place in the queer community.
This is Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Hi, I'm Lucy, a youth participant in Outcasting's bureau at Michigan State University. On this edition, Outcaster Samantha talks about not feeling queer enough for the LGBTQ community because of her bisexual identity.
I have never felt queer enough. As a bisexual woman, my sexuality is often disregarded as a phase, a stepping stone on the way to becoming a full-blown lesbian. For years, I thought that my feelings for men invalidated my feelings for women. I thought that I had to choose, gay or straight, and ignore any desires that went against my choice. But that's not how it works. I don't have a say in whom I am attracted to or whom I fall in love with. Choosing to focus on my attraction to one gender will not erase my feelings for another. But the wider queer community often misunderstands or dismisses bisexuality entirely, making me feel as though I have to repress part of my identity in order to be accepted by my own community. In the 1940s, Alfred Kinsey developed the Kinsey Scale, a 7-point sexuality rating that ranges from 0, exclusively heterosexual, to 6, exclusively homosexual. He helped to foster the popular notion still embraced by the queer community today that sexuality is a spectrum. However, many people, both within and outside of the LGBTQ community, use the Kinsey Scale as a sort of queer litmus test. Technically speaking, anyone who identifies between 1 and 5, indicating some attraction to more than one gender, could label themselves as bisexual, yet the idea still persists that those who identify as perfect threes and experience equal attraction to men and women are the only true bisexuals, even though this is not a universal or common experience among bisexuals. This is why I do not feel queer enough. It's a feeling of being isolated and untethered, of being too queer for the straight world, but not queer enough for the LGBTQ community. In fact, I don't even feel bi enough if I can't label myself as a 3 on the Kinsey scale. So where does this leave bisexual people? If we are always forced to quantify our queerness, will we ever feel like we belong to a community? The B in LGBTQ signifies that bisexual people are part of the queer community, but asking us to pick and choose parts of our identity, to constantly prove that we're queer, that we exist, can make us feel like outsiders. I have often felt embarrassed sitting in classes, surrounded by my openly queer peers who have been out since middle school, while I, a grown woman, am still partially closeted, despite knowing how important it is to be out and visible, especially for bisexual people. In fact, according to a 2013 survey conducted by the Pew Research Center, bisexuals are much less likely than gay men or lesbians to have come out to the important people in their life. While 77% of gay men and 71% of lesbians are out to all or most of the important people in their life, only 28% of bisexuals are. There are many reasons people may choose to remain closeted, but the stigma surrounding bisexuality makes it particularly difficult to come out, especially when support from the queer community is tenuous. Many gay and lesbian people feel as though bisexuality invalidates homosexuality because it makes sexuality look like a choice. When bisexual people are conceptualized as 50% straight and 50% queer, it invalidates our position within the LGBTQ community. People say that we need to pick a side, that we shouldn't be in queer spaces if we're not in a same-sex relationship, that we should be grateful to have straight-passing privilege when in fact neither the straight nor the queer community is seeing us as whole people. Being erased is not a privilege. It doesn't feel good to pretend you fit in with the straight world, knowing people don't see you in your entirety,
But it's even worse to think that if you're honest, the queer community may not have your back either. The wider queer community also participates in perpetuating stereotypes about bisexuals, claiming they are promiscuous or incapable of monogamy. This leads to problematic popular representations of bisexuality. For example, Transparent, an Amazon Prime television show marketed toward the LGBTQ community, portrayed its only self-identified bisexual character as a polyamorous sex addict whose only plot function is to complicate a heterosexual couple's relationship by having threesomes with them. Also, celebrities who act as de facto spokespeople for the LGBTQ community perpetuate negative images of bisexuality. One of these celebrities is Cynthia Nixon, who played Miranda Hobbs on Sex and the City. She openly denies her bisexuality because she doesn't like the term and is currently in a same-sex relationship, even though she still claims to be attracted to both men and women. Defining your sexuality is a personal matter, of course, but when the term bisexual is rooted in stigma, people are hesitant to proudly claim it. The LGBTQ community tends to view bisexual people through a monosexual lens, conceptualizing us as straight when we're with people of the opposite sex and queer when we're with people of the same sex. This misunderstanding of bisexuality makes me worry that if I marry a man one day, I will lose the support of the queer community entirely because they would only see a heterosexual relationship, not my queer identity. Regardless of whom I end up with long term, I will always be bisexual. Yet the queer community often puts pressure on bisexuals to prove their sexuality, wanting us to recount our personal sexual history, how many men we've been with, and how many women, before they believe that we're bisexual. Not only is this practice invasive, but it reduces bisexual people down to a number yet again. I desperately want to be a part of the LGBTQ community because I feel the most like myself when I'm around other queer people. I don't want to be isolated any longer, drifting somewhere in the middle of the Kinsey scale, but never landing in a full-fledged community. I want to belong so much that I've even had a hard time writing this piece because I'm worried that I'll never be fully accepted in the queer community if I critique it for often excluding bisexual people. I'm still learning to accept myself and see my sexuality as valid and worthy of being a part of the wider queer community, but it's up to the LGBTQ community to create an environment that is supportive of bisexual people and conducive to their coming out. I cannot speak for all bisexuals, but from my perspective, being a part of the LGBTQ community allows us to be ourselves in a way we can't be elsewhere. It allows us to embrace our identities instead of running away from them. Most importantly, it allows us to feel a little less alone. But I won't subject myself to queer litmus tests and never-ending skepticism of my identity in order to be included in a community that markets itself as welcoming while putting conditions on my sexuality. I do not have to quantify my queerness for anybody, including myself. I am bisexual, and that is enough.
Thanks for listening to Outcasting Overtime, a special feature from Outcasting, Public Radio's LGBTQ youth program. Outcasting is heard online at outcastingmedia.org, on iTunes, and on more than 50 public radio stations around the country. Outcasting Overtime is a production of Media for the Public Good, a nonprofit organization. Visit us at outcastingmedia.org to get information about Outcasting, watch Outcasting videos, access our social media links, and listen to Outcasting and Outcasting Overtime. Our Michigan State University faculty advisors are Mark Waddell and Jerry Alumet-Zaldez, and our executive producer is Mark Sofis. Special thanks to WKAR Radio at Michigan State University for help in making this recording. Thanks, and thanks for listening.
They might have fallen out of the headlines recently, but gay and bisexual men in Chechnya still live in fear of being detained and tortured. Living Without Prejudice is a charity set up to bring awareness to the ongoing purge in the southern Russian Republic. Late last year, LWP gathered a coterie of queer musicians and allies to record a cover of the 90s hit Stronger Together to benefit the cause.
We're stronger together, we're stronger together, gonna be together forever now, baby. Oh.
We can
From the single Stronger Together will go to aid gay and bisexual men being persecuted in Chechnya. For more information, Google Energize Records. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Program material this week came from Christopher Gall and Michelle Yater, produced by Steve Pride, from Janet Mason, and from Outcasting Overtime's Lucy and Samantha, produced by Mark Sophos. Peaches performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our individual listener donors, who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WCBN Ann Arbor, Michigan, KALW San Francisco, California, 2RRR Gladesville, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.